go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, welcome to Car Stuff. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Ben Bolin.
And I'm Scott Benjamin.
And Scott...
Yep.
So, we've been kicking around this topic idea for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, as someone who would like to think of themselves as thrifty, this was originally very, very exciting to me.
Yeah, it's an appealing idea.
It's in, you know what? What diplomatic language? Now, here's the question. Here's the question. How can a new car cost only $3,000 US? Now, this is going to bring up to some people the Tata Nano.
Yeah. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. I guess when you first heard this, about this, that's what I thought. I thought they've already done it. There's a $2,700 car.
Yeah.
Produced by Tata Motors. You know, the Nano that, you know, we talked about. I think we've talked about it on an episode.
Yeah, we have an episode about it.
It's like a lightweight car. Mm-hmm. What, $2,700 US is what it costs. Mm-hmm. And it weighs, you know, it's like, what is it, about 1,300 pounds, something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lightweight, small, no-frills car.
Mm-hmm. And it's not... It doesn't get that low weight because of any sort of fantastic materials engineering.
Yeah, yeah. You would think, you know, like, well, big deal. They're making cars lighter every day, right?
Right. Carbon fiber, et cetera.
Yeah, even aluminum.
Right.
Lighter metals.
Yeah.
Alloys, whatever.
That's not happening here.
No, that's not what they're doing. Go ahead.
They're just – I think one of the ways we say it in our article is that they're just providing less car. They're doing it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you edit this one?
Yeah, I did. This is from one of our writers, Aquelli, and Aquelli Parker.
Yeah, great
and,
writer. Good articles.
He's got an article that it's called How Can a New Car Cost Only $3,000? And, yeah, he mentions that, you know – you would think that they're doing this in some, you know, futuristic manner that, you know, you're going to get the car that you've got now in your driveway only for $3,000.
Right, like you can have your cake and eat it too.
Not the case. As he says here, they're doing it the old-fashioned way. They're providing less car, is what he says.
Yes. So one of the things that we mentioned in the Tata Nano episode is that the Nano, although it is – in some ways very good as an entry-level car,
mm-hmm.
for some middle-class members of that society, it legally cannot be sold in the United States.
No.
Because we have safety regulations that preclude some of the strategies that Tata has used.
Strategies, nice.
I'm also using diplomatic language.
Yeah, that is.
But you know who did think it was a good idea, Scott?
Yeah, who?
Nissan
did. That's right. And, you know, we'll get to this in just a second here, but there's another quick thing that I want to mention about, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to consider the markets that these are being sold in.
That's a good point.
These are emerging markets, right?
Right.
And I promise we'll get to who's doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
What they call emerging markets, and they're cars that are going to be sold in Indonesia, India, mm-hmm. and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, you know, not being able to be built here in the United States.
Right.
There's a whole line of discussion that we can go into with this, like, you know, what they should be allowed to use and what they shouldn't be allowed to use include in the vehicle for safety aspects, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that, you know, maybe you don't need ABS, you don't need power steering, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about cars that are doing away with bigger things like safety issues, and those are safety, obviously, but
right.
we're talking about like doing away with airbags or doing away with beams in the doors.
Yeah, or even things that seem like a trunk latch on the outside of the vehicle.
Yeah, that's right. Like in the Tata Nano, you have to access the cargo area from inside the vehicle. You can't even mm-hmm. access it from outside of the vehicle. So they really, really cut corners. And one way that they cut corners, or one of the biggest ways they cut corners, is labor cost. Now they build them in places like India where they can pay
Yeah.
You know, like the average auto worker makes something like $3.30 an hour.
Which is comparatively on the higher end of the scale for Indian manufacturing jobs.
Exactly. So if you're an auto worker, you've got a pretty good job making $3.30 an hour. Here in the States, you compare that to something like $30 an hour average for a U.S. auto worker on the line.
Yeah.
So, you know, the labor cost is dramatically lower. And what you get really for that money is basically a stripped-down car. I mean, you're going to get an extremely, extremely stripped-down, low amenities or no luxuries vehicle for that kind of cost. Now, you mentioned – I didn't mean to steal us away because we went backwards there, but who's doing this, Ben?
Oh, yeah, Nissan, Japanese company Nissan, who some car enthusiasts may be familiar with, did decide that this was an exciting market to dip their toes in.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. With emerging markets for cars, what we're seeing is a lot of potential, and there are numbers now to back up the facts. You know, we have quantifiable proof that people in emerging markets are buying more vehicles. And Nissan feels that the example of the Tata specifically, but also other lower price point entry level vehicles, they feel like it's a persuasive enough argument that they said, we're going to try to make a car that we can sell for just $3,000, which is A, amazingly unorthodox, and B, possibly dangerous to the Nissan brand.
You know, real quick here, Nissan already makes a car in Mexico that's brand new for $8,000.
Right, yeah.
What's the name of that car? I'll find it in just a second here. But they make another vehicle that costs about $8,000.
Yeah.
And it's called the Suru, the T-S-U-R-U, Suru. And that's equivalent, if you want an idea of what that looks like, that's like the Nissan Sentra here in the United States.
Yeah, good point.
But it's $8,000 brand new in Mexico, and it's already the cheapest car, the brand new car that you can get there.
Right.
Now, this is going to be like one-third of that cost. So what are you going to get for that? You can imagine, right?
Yeah.
Now, okay, I'm getting beyond myself here again. We keep jumping around, but Nissan's decided to do something pretty interesting with this, Ben. Right? They're bringing back a brand name that is beloved, I guess.
Yep.
Among enthusiasts and
cherished.
Exactly, cherished. I guess would be a good way to say it. They're bringing back the Datsun name. So the Datsun brand is coming back for 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I think is when they're expected to start delivering these vehicles, because they're talking about six new vehicles. Due by early 2014, that are going to be right around this range. Now, they've kind of said maybe it'll be a little bit more than $3,000, a little bit less.
Right,
it depends on the model you get and, you know, some of the amenities that you get. But even them, you know, even they are saying, like, you know, that $3,000 price point is tough to match.
Right.
And one quick thing here. You mentioned the markets that these are being sold in.
Yeah.
Now, we'll get into specifics of the vehicle in just a moment. But
sure.
So we're talking about who's this vehicle for, right? Who's the one that's going to be buying a $3,000 brand new vehicle? Well, it's actually a step up for a lot of people to be able to buy something, even though we're talking about a stripped down car, which we'll describe in a moment. But these are commuters who are, you know, they pack their entire family onto a single motorcycle. Or they, you've seen videos of that,
yeah,
I'm sure, photos of that, right?
This is a great point, yeah, because people are one of as we mentioned in our motor scooter and Vespa episode, transportation, especially in a high density area and a lot of emerging markets, is going to be stuff like bicycles, motor scooters.
Have you seen some of those, like the traffic intersections in India or, you know, wherever where they, I mean, it's just chaos.
Yeah.
They're driving everywhere. There's no lanes. There's no seeming order to anything. I mean, there's cattle walking through.
Uh-huh.
There are motorcycles, mopeds, bicycles, hand carts.
Someone said, hey, this looks like it might be an intersection. Let me set up a stall.
Yeah, buses with what seemed like 300 people on them. You know, they're hanging off the sides and on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And now these are people that are trying to take one step up from being on one of those other vehicles. They want their own personal transportation. So, you know, this is a sign that, you know, they're making it.
That's interesting because as we get to this point, one thing that we have to note is that there are some lessons Nissan should learn from Nano before they move on and really try to make a go of this, because it turned out that Tata had to change their marketing partway through because people wanted this entry-level, low-priced car. However, people did not want to be, you know, a laughingstock for driving what became known for a time as the poor man's car. You know, people didn't want to be seen as making a statement about their own poverty. So it became clear to Tata that the Indian car shoppers initially didn't want to be bad and didn't want to be seen as, you know, low income or somehow financially embarrassed. And there's a weird piece of logic here, because this is a great question. If you could afford a brand new Tata Nano, right, then what kind of nicer used car could you get for $2,700?
So, in other words, they're looking at this as almost like a status symbol. Is
yes.
that right? I mean, it's
yeah.
like, a, it's like
the, your new car should be a statement about your place in society in
okay.
some way.
All right, interesting. So even a $3,000 car, which to us, a new car, which is, you know, the stripped down version, yeah. To them is a big move up.
Right, but it still might not be as good as a used car that's a little bit more mainstream. That's for yeah. $3,000.
You know what? I've got to agree with this. I mean, right. I know later we're going to talk about this. You know the pros and cons, I guess.
Right, right.
But I don't know. I would personally, I would go for the used car that's a little bit better put together. It has a few more safety features. But there's also that new car appeal, right?
Oh yeah, that new car smell too.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder
yeah.
if it has new car smell.
Oh, probably does. Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff it doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? And I've got my notes here. The $3,000 car is just in general. And this is from an article on WSJ.com.
So this isn't specifically the Nano or the upcoming Datsun.
No. This is just kind of what you can expect on a vehicle
okay.
of this price range, I guess. Maybe that's mm-hmm. the best way to put it. They've got a great infographic on that site that I was telling you about, and it just kind of lists the features. And you can hover over areas and look at them. I've written down a few of these
okay.
Because to me they're pretty remarkable. Some of the things that this does not come with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just go through it real quick. It says four cylinder engine. You would think,
yeah,
no way,
two cylinder.
Two-cylinder engine.
Wow.
Now, remember the Geo Metro had
yeah.
three cylinders.
Yeah.
This takes it down to two-cylinder. Now, I'm not saying two-stroke. I'm
right.
saying two-cylinder. Now, two cylinders are kind of like about the size of, you know, an engine that you'd find on like a jet ski or like on a motorcycle.
Right, right.
So you can get some power out of a two-cylinder motor, but very good chance that they're not going to have much power.
Right, yeah. This is not something that you're really going to want to be on the high speed highway areas.
No, this is not a tuner's car by any means, right?
Not a
ABS, of course, we mentioned that already. No way.
Right.
And the crazy thing is that, you know, ABS, if you want to buy an entire ABS system, it's really only about $200 if you buy it on a wholesale, you know, market.
Ooh.
So like, let's say you're going to install ABS into a vehicle. It costs the manufacturer about $200 to install the whole system. And they decided that that's one area that they just don't need.
Which is weird, because nobody in the United States can get around ABS,
yeah,
even
right.
the new Vipers.
That's right, yeah.
SRTs.
It's a federally mandated thing, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons that this vehicle can't be brought to the United States. Automatic transmission, no way. It's manual transmission only. Mirrors. Now, there are fewer mirrors. It's not that there aren't any mirrors, but you may only get the rearview mirror and the driver's door only. You wouldn't get a passenger side mirror, any vanity
mm-hmm.
mirrors, or no power options on those as well.
Right.
Airbags? Nope.
Nada.
But you may be able to get a driver's side airbag if you pay extra for it.
Right. That's also the model that has radio and air conditioning. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's the other ones. You know, you're going to say air conditioning should be there because of, you know, the climates that we're talking about
right.
in the vehicles.
Sure.
Nope. No air conditioning. You got to roll down the windows, which are manually operated windows, by
mm-hmm.
the way. Hand crank windows for people who remember those. Seats, obviously, there's no power options, no adjustments. You can only get cloth or vinyl. And in some cases, you can only get a bench seat with no reclining option. So we're talking about real basic seating in these things.
But again, this is still a car. It's an enclosed space. It's a probably still even without some of the safety features that we consider status quo in the United States, it's still safer than being on a motor scooter.
True. Now, how did – okay, so – this kind of leads you to, you know, there's other things, you know, that, that are missing from this thing as well, but minor things like, you know, door handles and things like that that, you know, they're pared down, made a lot simpler. You may wonder how Nissan decided that this is what they wanted to do, right?
Good
question.
You may
say, like, well, you know, why would they even decide to do something like this? Well, it turns out that in, I think it was in 2007, they launched this, the secret, I'm going to say secret in finger quotes, but secret, because it's not secret anymore, a secret mission to kind of decide, you know, what people really needed in these markets, what they wanted, what they needed, their daily driving habits, you know, what they were desiring, I guess, in a vehicle. And so they sent out these exploratory groups, and they went to India. And one of the results, you know, they lived in the homes of the people. They drove with them to work every day, or they rode with them, whatever transportation they had. They talked with them a lot about this. And over the several months, you know, they determined that a lot of results. But one of the main results was that they realized that they just don't even desire to have airbags. They said, well, why would I really need that? All you need is just a slightly bigger front end. So if I get a front end collision, there's a bigger crumple zone. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, you know what? Let's do away with airbags then. And that's the kind of decision that was made. You know, they said, well, they really don't need it. They don't want it. I mean, they may need it, but they decided that they just didn't feel that that would do any better for them than would a slightly larger front end that would accept that impact. So, you know, things like that, it was more just talking to individuals and deciding individual needs, but, you know, then basing it on this whole study that they did.
Right. So let's not build a car and convince people that they want it. Let's see what kind of car people want and build that.
Precisely. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to get at, is that, you know, they really talked to the people and decided what they wanted.
And let's go ahead and take, if we've got a second here, a closer look at what I'm going to call the mastermind on the $3,000 car project.
That's okay.
Carlos, I may mispronounce his name here, so I apologize. Carlos Ghosn, G-H-O-S-N, the Nissan Motor Chief Executive.
Okay.
Now, here's what's interesting about this guy, Scott. He came to Nissan more than 10 years ago, like 13 years ago. He's been there for a while. When he came to Nissan, it was in danger of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So he was turning this place around, and he is – according to the articles I've read and according to an AP report, he's the only head of a major car maker that was raised in the developing world. He's born in Brazil, grew up in Lebanon.
Okay.
And he said that this has really determined the legacy that he wants to leave. Hmm. So he didn't own a car until he was 18. And, you know, as he says, in many developing countries, it's very difficult to have a car of any sort. So in 2010, this is a statistic from the AP report, only 38 people out of 1,000 owned a car in India.
Oh, no kidding.
In the United States, by way of comparison, that's 808 out of 1,000.
Wow.
So he thinks that
That's a dramatic difference.
It is. And it's a huge difference, 38 versus 808.
Yeah, and you know what? I bet all those other – and you're saying car. I bet those people have some other form of transportation,
yeah,
a bicycle,
absolutely.
A motorcycle, a moped, something like that,
right,
that they're getting around town on, which, as we talked about it, this is a step up when you're having to deal with, you know, things like other motorcycles with eight people stacked on them, or,
sure,
or buses.
Hauling quite a few boxes. Or
cattle. You know, things like that you just don't think about it, you know, on the main streets. It happens.
It does happen. I haven't been to India yet. I hope to go sometime. Mm-hmm. And I would really, when I go, I'd like to see what this Tata Nano is all about. But I wanted to get a perspective from somebody in defense of this $3,000 car move. Because let's be honest, man, a lot of Datsun fans are not happy about this.
Yeah, you know, this is a dramatic turnaround from, you know, the 1960s, 1970s image of Datsun that was portrayed, you know, or actually that was earned back then by them, because there were a lot of fans of the Z cars.
Yeah, they were like approachable but classy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about like right now we're on the sixth generation of Z cars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that goes back a long way. And there are people that are very, very passionate about the Z car and the Datsun name. And it meant to them quality. It meant to them, you know, a lot of extras, as I'll mention.
Reliability, personality.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of personality. And, you know, there's still even I've seen a few of them around here, around town recently, restored versions. And they're beautiful.
Beautiful cars. And this is the highfalutin term for this kind of concern that people have is something called brand dilution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where if you own – let's say you are a proud owner of a Ferrari and you find out that Ferrari is, for some reason, mass producing something that is like a Sentra.
Oh, like a city car of some kind.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with Sentras or city cars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you buy a high-end vehicle, or if you buy a vehicle, you're also buying a sort of sense of that vehicle's brand. That's why you're never going to see Rolls-Royce put out a $3,000 car.
Yeah, understood.
And as a result, this brand dilution means that Nissan could put itself in danger if they just make, you know, like the Nissan Minima or something.
Is this like the Aston Martin Signet?
This is a great – that's
only,
a great comparison.
Only it's got a high price tag, of course. But,
right.
But you remember that? It's just a rebadged vehicle, right, that
that
bears the Aston Martin name.
And some Aston Martin fans, let us not forget, were
up in arms.
Livid. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, now I know you're saying that, you know, some people are for it.
Some people are for it,
Some people are for it. Some people are against it, as we like to say.
Yeah, and that's always our big question.
Yeah, for it, or is it for it or again it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, one person who's again it is it's a former Nissan Datsun executive who has, the quote says, misgivings about a cheap Datsun.
Okay.
And the reason is that his name is Yatuka,
mm-hmm.
goes by Mr. K. Katayama.
Yeah.
And he's a former Nissan executive who was around when they first, in 1935, started rolling off the first Datsuns. Now, a lot of people won't know this, but Datsun name goes back to actually 1931. It goes way, way back. I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that because they're only accustomed to seeing like the 1970s Z cars, you know, that I was mentioning.
Yes.
But they do go way, way back. And actually, the Datsun name goes back to 31. He was a new hire in 1935 to this company. So get this, he's 103 years old now, Ben.
Yeah, I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah.
He's also one of the people who's credited with making Datsun as popular as it is.
Exactly, yeah. So he's been around a long, long time with the company. Obviously, he's retired. They interviewed obviously, probably about 50 years ago, right? So he said that he was sad when the Datsun name disappeared, but he's glad to hear that it's coming back. However, his misgivings are that he says it'll be a shame if they're cheap cars because he wants it to be more of a polished car is what he says. To bring back a car company, a brand name like that, and then to have it associated or tied to a cheap car.
Yeah.
And I say cheap, I mean a low-cost car.
Right.
Let's just say cheap. It's a cheap car.
Yeah, we're not making any sort of, like, ethical insinuation or some sort of value judgment other than the fact that it is less expensive.
No. So here's a 103-year-old guy that says, I'm concerned about it because I've worked with the company, you know, back in 1935 through retirement, and now I'm just concerned that, you know, it's going to drag the name down a little
and
bit.
And Mr. K, let's not forget, he's an expert. He is, like, the expert.
You know what? He is. He's been around probably the longest at this point, you know, as far as, you know, somebody who is familiar with the Nissan Datsun name, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of leads to our final question, if I'm not cutting you off here. Do you have more about
that? Yeah, I want to do a pro.
Oh, please do.
Just a quick pro, because we do need to get to this question. But here's the pro side. We'll go back to the chief executive, Carlos Ghosn.
Sure.
And he is familiar with these criticisms. And he believes that the car that they'll roll out will be modern and fresh because – buyers in these emerging markets want a car that is in their budget. He also says this could be one of Nissan's main accelerators of growth. Now, here are some numbers that are interesting.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not taking a side in either of these, but we do need to get these numbers out. Car sales in emerging economies, according to Nissan, may account for as much as 60% of all auto industry sales in 5 years. Currently, it's at 43%, which is higher than I thought it'd
be. That's really high.
Right. And so some consultants, such as Ralph Kalmbach in Munich, says that selling cars in developing countries is ambitious but necessary for the industry's big players, because there's no way around this entry-level segment for global automakers. It's growing too fast.
Wow, so they have to do it.
If you want to maintain market share, then logically you would have to do it. But if you want to survive as a company, you have to do something. So it's either the Nissan ends up selling, maybe making a very committed, specialized market,
mm-hmm.
right? But they would have to create that. Mm-hmm. And then this other market already exists. So while I understand Mr. K's criticisms and, frankly, very valid concerns, it also seems that the leadership of Nissan has a compelling reason for this.
Sure. So it's just a flat-out business decision to do this. They have to be in the markets where they're going to make the sales, right?
But is it right to use Datsun for this?
Ah, that's the question. Now, see, we're getting to the big question here.
Yes, yeah.
And the big question is it a mistake for Datsun or Nissan to use the name, you know, the brand Datsun for mm-hmm. this $3,000 car? I mean, is it a mistake? I'm posing that to everybody. I'm going to pose that to you.
Okay.
I've got my own opinion about it. I think you probably know already what I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to ask you, and I think I know what you think already too, but all of our listeners, everywhere, Facebook,
yeah.
you know, wherever, just
Twitter,
tell
email.
Us, you know, send us an email, whatever you think. But really, is it a mistake for Datsun to tie their name to this $3,000 car? And I say yes. But I think it tarnishes the name of, you know, this iconic brand. You
okay.
know, that, and now it's gone. I understand that.
Right.
Other brands are gone as well that are mm-hmm. well loved. You know, that are cherished, I guess, by some.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I've ever owned a Datsun or anything like that, but I do think that, you know, they stood for quality. They really were good cars at the time. And I've got a quick
yeah.
quote here from you know, this is back in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Road and Track wrote about the Fairlady 1500, which is, you know, the Fairlady is the name of the Z cars here in the United States.
Right.
In Japan, they called them the Fairlady. Here in the States, they called them the Z cars.
Because Americans wouldn't buy a car called Fairlady.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. So the Fairlady 1500, which when it came to the U.S. in 1962, it was loaded with lots of, you know, standard equipment.
Right.
And Road and Track wrote, "We've never seen," and this is a quote, "we've never seen a car that comes with so many extras at no additional charge." And so, in other words, Nissan Datsun, rather,
mm-hmm.
was not holding back. They were giving everything they had into this car, you know, all the options, all the bells and whistles. It was a neat looking little sports car. I don't know. They were known for extras. This is a complete opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
This is saying, here's a Datsun. It's going to be completely stripped down. It's going to have nothing in it. What do you think of Datsun now? That's I mean, if this is your first impression of the Datsun
yeah.
motor car, what do you think of it? I mean, that's my impression on it. That's my take on it. And, you know, now that we're up to six generations, they make, you know, Nissan makes great cars.
Yeah.
They have SUVs, they have mm-hmm. trucks, they have, you know, sedans, they mm-hmm. have everything, right? Full line of vehicles, and even that awesome GTR. To build something like this $3,000 car, I think under the Datsun name is a mistake.
Okay. I think that is a spirited defense, and B, the only reason that I was laughing a little is when you said, "What do you think of Datsun now?" It reminded me of every scene in the movies where they're like, "Oh, what do you think of so and so now?
What do you think of it now?"
Yeah.
How about
and
now?
I think that's a good point, man. And honestly, I'm on the same page with you here because, yes, it is almost inevitable that the future of a lot of car sales, or vehicle sales in general are mm-hmm. going to go to the parts of the world where there are more and more people and emerging economies. Mm-hmm. And now notice I qualify that. I say vehicles because, you know, the jury's still out on what kind of vehicles this might be.
And there are going to be six of them by 2014, according to this article.
Right.
So there's going to be a variety of vehicles available.
So here's my take on it. I am also going to say, with no disrespect intended to anyone involved, that I don't think it's the best thing for Datsun to have this car come out, not because it's a super low price or anything, but because it's so different from mm-hmm. every Datsun. You know, you don't really – Ferrari doesn't come out with a station wagon. They just don't. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that station wagons are bad any more than it is to say that a $3,000 car is good or bad, but it's not a Datsun.
Yeah.
And I think that rather than adopting this into the Datsun pantheon the way that they would want Datsun enthusiasts to do, there's going to be a backlash because, well, now, of course, we know how it is whenever you resurrect a brand, even if they put out the exact same Datsun as the Z car people are used to, people would still get mad about it.
Probably.
And still be a little bit cantankerous about it. But I think that maybe this is a way to have – maybe this is an opportunity to have a new mark of some sort come out. Now, earlier I joked with the saying the Minima, which I think is a clever car name. But it would never sell.
It is clever, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I worked on that one over Thanksgiving. But the point that I'm trying to make is I do see – the problem here, the dilemma, which is if you come out with a new brand, right?
Yeah.
Then instantly you're going to run into what Tata Nano ran into, which is people don't want to buy the poor people's car.
Yeah, or a car that they've never heard of.
Like or a car that's a risk.
I guess. See, that's the thing. They're carrying the Datsun name, which is, you know, well-known, respected name.
Sure, storied even.
Yeah, exactly. But the other problem – see, there's so many facets to this, Ben.
Yeah.
Some people are only going to know Datsun by this vehicle. Others
right.
that are older, you know, like maybe our generation or older,
sure.
baby
yeah.
boomers even,
yeah.
they're gonna recognize that Datsun was once the producer of these great vehicles, Datsun, you know, mm-hmm. the trucks or cars or whatever they had in the past, and say that that was a great car. What are they doing with this? Why are they building that?
Yeah.
And, you know, other people are going to say, like, why would I want a Datsun? I know what they make. They make that $3,000 car that I wouldn't touch.
Ouch.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's the dilemma is that, you know, there's so many different ways to look at this. And Nissan has to look at it in a strictly business sense and say,
right.
like, well, there's 60% of new vehicle sales are going to be in these emerging markets.
Mm-hmm.
We better get in there.
Now, we also have to qualify our – it's clear that we're both again at least using – we're both again it when it comes to using the Datsun name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I – based on some of the numbers we looked at, I think it is a good, indeed necessary move to make lower price point vehicles for emerging markets. I don't know if taking the name of an existing – completely different. That's the thing, Scott. They're completely different cars.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's the best idea. I don't know if that's putting a rectangle or like a square into a circle.
What about this, Ben?
What about it?
Let me wrap this up here.
What if they completely
surprise us? And once they've got the Datsun brand going here with, you know, these six $3,000 mm-hmm. cars, they start producing some really high-end sports cars also in other markets because the Datsun brand is back.
Yeah.
Maybe that's an angle here too. I think that would be so cool if they did that. I don't know why it would make
Me
a difference,
too.
But the badging on the car makes a difference to some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's a Datsun Z car, you know, for the next generation, you know, if we go up to the seventh generation of
right.
Z car and it's a Datsun instead
yeah.
of being a Nissan, maybe that would sell some cars.
Yeah, and there's something that we haven't talked about. I saved it for the end because I wanted to end on an up note.
What's that?
What if these $3,000 cars are brilliant? What if they're great? I know. I'm just saying.
Without saying too much here, I was just on vacation, and I rented the absolute worst car I've ever driven in my life, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And what? It was a new car. I'm not going to say the name or manufacturer.
Okay.
I'll tell you later. But it was a POS, as we like to say. Right?
Really, that bad?
It was horrible. And it was a new car, clearly had been in an accident. That was most of the problem.
Yeah, so the
but it was
hand
terrible.
Was off.
And this, I mean, here's a car that I'm guessing is around $20,000.
Okay.
If I had to guess.
You're narrowing
a
it down.
A four-door vehicle,
me.
It's maybe probably less. It was okay. It was an economy car, but still.
Okay.
I've driven other economy cars, and even this car that, you know, is, I'm going to guess between 15 and 20 now. Let's
sure.
say that.
Okay.
Pile of junk.
Wow.
And it was just terrible. It was like a tin can on wheels. It was the worst rental car experience I've ever had.
All right. Okay, I see. So the logically there, if that's 15 to 20 grand.
Here's a car that's one-fifth of that cost.
Yeah.
What are you going to get?
Well, it's just Nissan makes good vehicles.
Yes, they do.
So they do have the know-how and the engineering. I see both sides of the argument, and I got to tell you, I wish there was a new brand that they were using it for. I see where this decision is coming from. But believe it or not, that is not the coolest thing I've seen this week. Do you want to know what the coolest thing I've seen this week is?
I would like to know that.
We hope that – I guess this is it for the $3,000 car.
Yeah.
We need that big question answered again. What is that?
Yeah, I just want people to tell me if they think it's a mistake for Datsun or Nissan, I guess. So let's say Datsun.
Okay.
Is it a mistake for Datsun to tie their name to this $3,000 car? And tell me why or why it's a good thing for them to do this.
Yeah, and you can tell us this on our Facebook page. You can drop us a line on Twitter. It doesn't have to be long. You can just say, for it or again it. We'll know what you're talking about. And you can also send us an email along with any suggestions for upcoming topics to our fancy email address.
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.